everybody, and welcome back to Estuary Live. My name is Whitney Jenkins. I work for the North Carolina National Estuarine Research Reserve. And this morning we're going to be talking about coastal geology and dredging. And I'd like to introduce some of the people who are here with us this morning.
I'm Stockton Brown from Halifax Academy.
I'm Jeff Ward, and I'm a coastal geologist for Division of Coastal Management.
How you doing? My name is Greg Rudolph, or Rudy. I'm with Carter County and a coastal geologist.
It's wonderful. We have two professional geologists with us this morning and a student who's in ninth grade. And I'm sure you're all wondering why we're wearing hard hats this morning. Jeff, could you explain why we're wearing hard hats?
Well, if you can see behind us, we're in an active construction area. And we happen to be on an island, and maybe many of you have heard about it. It's Brant Island, and it's just offshore of Morehead City. And it's attached to the back of Bogue Banks. And Brant Island, well, you can see lots of great shrubbery and grasses, and it looks very natural in a natural landscape. It's a man-made island. And then if you see the big pond here in the middle of it, we'll explain what happened to that sediment a little later in the segment here.
All right, I think Stockton had a question for us first off this morning.
Yes, what is dredging and what's involved in that?
Dredging is really when you just take sediment out of a waterway for any number of reasons. But this sediment was taken out of the inlet here at a Beaufort Inlet as part of navigation because we've got the state port here in Morehead City, if the camera can swing around and see that. So we've got ships coming in and out of here daily. And so to keep those waterways clear, they've got to take the sediment out of the channel that fills in from natural processes. The sand and the mud just kind of fills in those channels. When they dredge it, they need to put it somewhere. So the question is where to put it. And Brant Island is a very convenient location that's right here by the state port. And the one good thing about Brant Island is the sediment we're standing on is only short-lived. It only lives here for about 8 to 10 years. And every decade they pump it out and they put the good stuff out on the beach. And so you can see behind us, we've got a big gaping hole. That's about 3 million cubic yards that was put out onto Fort Macon and Atlantic Beach during the past 6 months. And people are probably asking, 3 million cubic yards, that means nothing. Well, I want you to think of 200,000 dump trucks, about 15 cubic yards per dump truck. And that's how much sediment was taken out of here and put out onto the beach. So it's really considered a beneficial use when we can take what some people call spoil material. It's actually really good material, and it makes our beaches a lot nicer to walk on, and it helps offset the coastal erosion that takes place as part of the natural coastal processes.
Okay, great. I just want to encourage everybody out there, if you have questions, please send them in. Please let us know your school's online. We'll try to say your name.
All right, now, folks may not be familiar with the area, so we're going to put up a graphic here. And I apologize for the folks down south. We don't have the entire state here, but we do have Bogue Banks, where we are right here. And Brant Island is right where my finger is. Here's the inlet right out to the Atlantic Ocean. And here's the state port. We've got Morehead City and Beaufort right here. So we are right there on the backside of Bogue Banks. Kind of gives you a feeling for where we are in the state.
And talking about the state, we had a question from Anthony, who's in Warren Middle School. He wants to know, how does population growth affect the coast? Can you talk about that on a geologic perspective?
Well, I'm going to throw that one over to Rudy because he deals with population growth out here with the Shore Protection Office.
It affects the coast in a bunch of ways. I mean, there's runoff, infrastructure needs. As far as infrastructure needs go, there's as soon as you get more people coming to the coast, these either permanent residents or vacationers or even businesses, there's a need for more roads, sewers and septics, and more waterway, what's called infrastructure, which includes channels, dredging, and also a big draw of the coast is the beaches, and that kind of dovetails into the beach nourishment aspect, because when people come up to the beach, they expect a wide beach, especially at Fort Macon here. Actually, Fort Macon is the number one park as far as attendance in the entire state, so that's a really big draw. just about everyone.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We have a lot of tourists coming to our beaches, and they expect nice wide beaches for their vacation. And we don't allow hard structures on our beaches, do we, Jeff?
No, and that's one great thing about North Carolina. We have a very progressive coastal management program here. And the rules put forth by our Coastal Resources Commission, they're the body that's appointed by the governor that really makes the rules for our state. Years ago, they made it illegal to put any type of hardened structure or hardening the shoreline, and that's anything like a bulkhead or a groin or a jetty. Now, folks may have seen some of those structures out on the shore. There are a few, but they all existed before the rules went into place. Then a couple years ago, Senator Basnight put forth a law that then took it to a higher level. A law is much tougher to pass and has a lot more teeth than a rule from the Coastal Resources Commission. So it is illegal to harden our shoreline. So that really only gives us one option to protect against coastal erosion. And that's really a soft protection of the shoreline. And that has to do with sand. And that's what we call beach nourishment. And beach nourishment is very, very far reaching. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I want to say hats off to Burgaw Middle School. Thanks for logging on. And all the other schools out there, let us know where you are. Send your questions along at any time during this broadcast, and we'll do our best to address them and say hello and answer any questions. But we were talking about soft protection and beach nourishment. Lots of folks just figure, well, that's any time you put sand on the beach. But there's also dredge disposal. As I said before, a lot of folks have called dredging spoils. You know, when the stuff comes out of the channel that you're dredging, they used to call this a spoil island. But as you can see, I wish you could be here to walk on this. This is beach quality sand. This is exactly what you want between your toes when you're down here in the summertime on Bogue Banks. And so we stay away from spoil islands because this is really a good island. There's nothing spoiled about it. Now, sometimes in the dredging process, in addition to sand, you get some mud. And if we could go to some of the slides that we have on PowerPoint, we can see some aerial shots of Brant Island. And as we go through these aerial shots, I want folks to look at the color differences between some of the sediments. And now these are very recent aerial photos of Brant Island that were taken in the past couple weeks. So you'll notice there is a big hole in the island, and that's the hole we're looking at back there. And we had a question earlier, how deep is that water? That's maybe about 20 feet deep at its deepest point. And that cliff face over there is probably 30 to 40 feet, Rudy, would you say? So we're looking at maybe, if you could drain all the water, maybe about 60 feet of relief from the top where the trees are all the way to the bottom of the water. And so do we get a slide number? We could go to slide 4 on the PowerPoint. And we've got it labeled sand and mud. And you can see that the sand is the light-colored material and the mud is the dark-colored material. And so when you're dredging a channel, you not always get the sand, you get the mud, because we have a whole spectrum of grain sizes that go from small, less than a millimeter, all the way up to 4, 5, 6 millimeters in length. And that may be hard for folks to say, so I'm going to pop off camera and I'm going to get some samples real quick.
Okay, we had a question from one of the schools about how many miles of coastline there are in North Carolina. Rudy, do you know that answer?
Yeah, it's approximately 320.
320
miles.
320 miles of coastline. So we have a lot of beach to take care of here in North Carolina.
We do. We have, of course, 320 miles of oceanfront beach and 19 active inlets. And then if you go back at our estuaries, which this is my greatest fact I like to throw out, the Albemarle and the Pamlico Sounds and the Croatan and Core Sound and Bogue Sound and all of our estuaries, it's the first largest semi-enclosed lagoonal estuary in the world. So we really do have a special system here. And the most noteworthy, you see the Albemarle and the Pamlico Sounds. They're the largest, but it's made up of a lot of sounds that make all the estuaries behind the barrier island. And the shoreline behind the barriers is about 3,600 miles. So all said and done, if you include our oceanfront and our estuary, we have about 4,000 miles of coastline in North Carolina. It's one of the largest coastlines in the U.S.
Great. And the Albemarle-Pamlico region that you were talking about, they're one of our sponsors here in Estuary Live. And Albemarle-Pamlico National Estuary Program, Bill Kroll's with us this week. I want to say good morning to Mrs. Blake's class. Thanks for joining us. We had a really interesting question. What happens to the animals that live on the bottom when you dredge?
A lot of those animals are sucked up into the dredge apparatus and put back out, and that is a concern. You have to weigh the social and the economic benefits to the natural ecological benefits. And that's something that we grapple with all the time in coastal management and the environmental organizations and the people that do dredge. And we had another question, is who pays for dredging? And that differs. A lot of times the state ports will, if they're cleaning out the port, and that's tax money. There is federal money set aside for it, so it comes from the federal and the state level. And then obviously sometimes private companies will come in and dredge behind private islands, such as Figure 8 Island, which is down south of here, just north of Wrightsville Beach. But it is an environmental impact is a big concern, and it's something we worry about, not just when you dredge. And I should say, you know, we've just entered turtle nesting season from May to November, and so there's no beach nourishment allowed right now, and there's no dredging allowed right now along our coast, because we really are cognizant of the fact that there are sea turtles out there, and they're starting to nest and bury their eggs. So that's another progressive thing about North Carolina, is we really do our best to take care of the environment. I was in South Carolina 2 weeks ago, and they dredge year-round. I'm happy to say that we're letting the turtles alone. And then when we also dredge, we do try and monitor our beaches and see the impact of this material. Because when you put this material that was dredged and you move it again to the beach, you have another environmental impact where you're throwing this down onto the beach and smothering some of the animals that do live in the beach. And so there are lots of studies and research that focus on that.
You have a question? And Stockton has a question for you, Jeff.
What are the other islands that are used as dredge spoiled islands? Like, what other islands can nourish the beaches? How many other islands are there, and where are they?
Well, that's an excellent question. There are confined disposal islands or dredged material islands all the way up and down the coast. And if you ever look at a map, maybe a USGS topographic map, when they cut the intracoastal waterway, which is a big canal that really is behind our barrier islands and goes from the north to the south part of the state, all up and down the east coast. That material, when it came out of the canal, was put on the sides of the canal. So you can see these islands. It's not all sand and it's not all mud. And that's one thing that's really special about Brant Island. Now, we have some other islands in this area, such as Radio Island and Marsh Island, that were dredge disposal facilities. But this one's really special in the fact that it is directly used as a strategic resource for Bogue Banks, Atlantic Beach, and Fort Macon. So managing this sediment material is really critical, because as I pointed out, there's some mud in here. It's hard to see, but from the aerials you can see where some of the mud is in this island. And you get the mud with the sand. And you need to manage and know where your mud is so you don't put it out on the beach. And so you're putting the beach quality material. So it's a beneficial use of this material, and then the money material, as it fills up the island, once they do all sorts of biological tests and chemical tests and it's clean, they'll take that offshore into an offshore disposal area, and it basically settles through the water column in the ocean and is deposited on the ocean floor. And we have a map of that. Rudy? This will show you all where the offshore... It's called the ODMDS, that's a mouthful, the Offshore Dredge Material Disposal Site is, with respect to where we are. Rudy, do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, the harbor here at Morehead City is really divided into two components, and they use two different pieces of a dredging equipment. One piece of dredging equipment is known as a hopper dredge, and it has these vacuum drag heads, arms that essentially take up the sand and put it into the belly of the ship or the hopper, and once the ship is full, it could steam offshore to one of these two offshore disposal sites and dump the material. So that's the outer harbor hopper dredge, and that's completed every year. And again, also in the winter to avoid turtles, and also biologic productivity is also considered low in the winter, so that kind of works that we dredge this area in the winter.
And by biologic productivity, you mean that not as many animals are active, animals aren't laying eggs.
Exactly.
Animals
exactly.
are dormant because it's cold.
That's right, and then some of this species migrate offshore or down south, up north, depending on their on their habits. Now, another component of this harbor, and the one that's that has a lot of relevance here to Brant Island, is that the inner harbor, here, kind of on the kind of estuarine side of the Barrier Island complex, is maintained every other year, using what is known as a pipeline dredge, and that has a drill bit mechanism that takes the sand and pumps it to a given area. And it doesn't have, unlike a hopper, it can't hold sand. So once it's going, it has to put it someplace. And that someplace, in this instance, is Brant Island. So Brant Island is used every 2 years. It becomes full. And once it becomes full, we have to find a place to take out this material to provide accommodation space for brand new, a dredged material. And that area, once Brant Island becomes full, there's a pipeline route, and it's taken here to Bogbanks and pushed along to Fort Macon and Atlantic Beach.
Thank you. We had some questions. One of them is, why do you dredge? And we talked about that a little earlier. We dredge to keep waterways open so that boats can move through. We have a lot of sand that moves around in our estuary and can cause waterways to become very shallow. So to keep boats moving around, we dredge. We also dredge. We use some of that material to re-nourish our beaches. We also use material offshore to nourish our beaches because, as we mentioned before, we don't allow hard structures on our ocean front in North Carolina. Hard structures meaning concrete, rocks, things like that to keep the sand stable. And so in order to keep our beaches wide, for people to come back, our tourists to come back and use these beaches for recreation during the summertime, we put this dredge material on the beaches. And we had another really good question. It was, how do you decide where the dredge material goes? I believe that was the question. How do you decide that?
Well, right now the ports are lucky in that they have some dredged material sites where they can put the material. The state, it's a very rigorous process of the state agencies are involved, the federal government's involved. The material has to be clean if it's going to go offshore, so you've got to test it for chemicals. And then there's a certain grain size that you have to achieve if you're going to put it on a beach. And we really want what we call beach-compatible material, which is the type of sand you would expect if you were walking on the beach on your summer vacation. You don't want to go out to a muddy beach or a beach with a lot of rocks on it. And Stockton's going to help us. One way that we determine the grain size of the material is we do it by sieving. And we've got nested sieves like this, and they're just different mesh sizes. So it's like a really hard metal screen. And the sediment will fall through here. And so we'll just grab a couple of these. So we don't really want anything coarser than this mesh size. And this is about 4.75 millimeters. So that's maybe an eighth of an inch, a quarter of an inch. And sometimes they don't like to come apart. So what we're going to do is we're going to take two of our sieves. We're going to take a coarse one and a fine one. And we're going to have Stockton hold that. And I'm going to take some sand from the island here. And I just shake that.
Keep shaking. Is
okay, that's great. Through? That's great. So what you can see here, if we can get a close-up of this material, this is all natural shell material that's coarse. It's coarser than 4.76 millimeters. And it's natural shells. This is what you would find in the natural environment. But you don't want too much of this stuff on the beach unless it's naturally occurring there. And most of the sand on the beach, you'll notice, is about this size. This is good beach quality sand here. And this came right out of this island, which came right out of the channel.
We have lots of great questions coming in. We'll try to get to those as soon as we can. Please keep sending them in. Let's see. Candace, is that right? From Warsaw Elementary. What does it say?
How often do we dredge?
How often do you dredge?
Rudy, what are we doing? About once a year?
Well, it depends on the shoal rates. And shoal material is just the fancy word for when sand enters a channel. So, basically, it's controlled, at least on a navigation standpoint, on the draft of the ship or the amount of water it needs. The draft here, a channel depth here in Morehead City is approximately 45 foot because a lot of these bigger ships come in, and so when the shoal material gets above 45 foot, like say 43 foot or 42 foot, the Army Corps of Engineers will dredge this channel, and that equates to just about every year. Different channels are dredged on different time frequencies based on that kind of concept.
Thank you. Stockton, you had a question.
How far from Morehead City are we?
Well, can we go to the slides, and we're about a mile away. In any one of those slides, there are a couple slides where you can see Morehead City right across the sound. And gosh, we're less than a mile, wouldn't you say?
Morehead City Port is right there.
Yep. We can see, we could almost swim to the port right now over in Morehead City.
We had another good question from Bergall Middle. They wanted to know what beaches need the most care.
Well, that's a good question, and it's really the beaches. There are two ways to look at this, because we've got our Outer Banks and the National Seashore where there's no development, and those beaches need little to no care because we let them be in their natural state. So they erode and they accrete, and accrete is just a fancy word for grow. They actually, sand builds out on the beaches in these natural cycles that happen during the year. But because there's no development there, no buildings, no highways, no pipelines or electricity, we don't really have to worry about it if the island erodes and then moves back, because our barrier islands are actually moving landward as part of the natural wave processes, and as sea level rises ever so slightly. Sea level's been coming up since the last ice age 18,000 years ago, and it's still just inching up little by little.
We have a really good question. Someone wants to know, how did ships travel before we started dredging?
Very carefully. And you'll actually note that off our shore it's called the graveyard of the Atlantic, because we have so many shoals out there. And a shoal is just a big pile of sand. It's where really the ocean kind of shallows up because the seafloor is coming up because the sand is piling up. And so lots of ships ran aground and sank. And really, just a week ago, a Menhaden, a fishing boat, ran aground here and was taking on a little too much water. So dredging is very, very strategic, so that boats, commercial boats, recreational boats, charter fishing boats, so they don't run aground. So it's really a safety issue as well of a commerce issue with the port. And one reason we get so much sand, if you see our natural barrier islands here, I mentioned we have 19 active inlets along our coast. Well, sand moves down these barrier islands in a natural process called a longshore drift, or sometimes it's called littoral drift. And part of that natural process is it moves into the inlet. And as the tide comes in, which is called a flood tide, and so the land's up here and the ocean is out here, it brings sediment up into the estuary or the lagoon. And then as the tide goes out, or that's called the ebb tide, then there's another pile of sediment here. And these are deltas, kind of like a pile of sediment at the end of a river, like the Mississippi Delta. And so you get these big piles of sand here. So sand will move down the island into these deltas and then continue down this island. So a lot of times you've got to come through and dredge these inlets and get all this sand out of here. And what our state likes to do is keep that sand in the natural system and put it back on the beaches. So it really serves two purposes. It's nice because it offsets coastal erosion and it makes a nice beach to walk on, but it also takes that sand and it keeps it moving in the direction it was intended to. Because if you were to take all the sand away, you would end up starving this barrier island down here, because it's not getting the natural progression of sand as it moves down the coast. And so that's where a lot of our sand comes from, and it's a natural process. But once you start getting ships and navigation and you need sand for the beaches, then we have to find a way to work with these natural processes.
And we had an interesting question. Trisha wants to know, is it true that they use old Christmas trees on the beach to stop erosion?
I have seen that, and you can actually see that at Fort Macon. Sometimes I've seen this work, sometimes I haven't. And it's very much like sand fencing. If anybody's ever gone to the beach and seen the wooden fences that are attached together, the slats attached together by wire, what that does is it slows down the wind. And any sand that happens to be in the wind, actually when the wind slows down, the sand drops out of suspension and really drops right there on the beach. So the Christmas trees in some ways act in the same way, slow down the wind and trap the sediment
I think it's also an interesting way to get rid of your old Christmas tree. Instead of just throwing it in the landfill, you're sort of putting it into the environment to decay naturally instead of filling up our landfills.
Absolutely. And we had another interesting question about what type of sea life lives back in the hole inside of Brant Island, because that is seawater back there. Now, when they dredged this island, they had to cut into it from the side. And so this was actually open out into the estuary. And so I'm sure there's all types of sea life in there, and hopefully it got out as they were working. And they've now diked it off, and they've built a sand berm across and closed the island again, so that this water inside here is not in communication with the water out there. But I would still suspect that there's a minimal amount of sea life that's trapped inside this water, kind of like a tidal pool. And as they start to fill this dike again, or start to fill this island again, this water will get pushed out of a pipe that's in the side of the island where all the excess water goes, and hopefully all those animals and plants will get pushed out that pipe and right back into the estuary.
Great. We have some more questions coming in. Amy's writing furiously. Warsaw wants to know, how does pollution impact dredging? Is that the question?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And pollution impacts dredging in the fact that if the sediments are polluted, you don't want to put them on the beaches, and you don't necessarily want to put them out in the ocean. So if there are polluted sediments, you want to contain them somewhere in a landfill, or if you were to put them in this island, they would either have to stay in this island or be taken upland away from the coast and put in a landfill and maybe remediated or cleaned up and have the pollution removed from the sediment. So the state ports in particular are very careful about testing any material that goes in here, as are any of the agencies that are involved in the placement of sand on your beaches. So the sand that gets put out there, whether they're rebuilding habitat for sea turtles or they're actually doing a storm protection project and building dunes and widening the beach, all that material is we have a lot of rules and regulations in place to make sure that material is clean.
We had a really good question. Somebody wants to know how dredging affects the natural accretion and erosion of barrier islands.
Well, this is still under research, and a lot of people argue that if you look at these deltas here and you take sand out of this delta and put it onto a beach, that you'd throw the whole system out of equilibrium, because essentially you've taken and you've created a big hole or a sink. So the sediment that's coming naturally down the coast along shore, it doesn't bypass and go to this island. It actually just fills that hole, and it has a much longer residence time. So in the short term, this barrier island may not receive sediment because you're taking it out of the delta. So it's anytime you're going to go and do a navigation project, the engineers and the consultants run a lot of engineering models and circulation models to see how dredging inlets and moving channels will affect the entire coastal system as well as the shorelines of the barriers.
Marcel wanted to know, can you dredge too much, and if so, what happens?
Well, we try and limit dredging to the channels that already exist. You can dredge too much, and you can go too deep and get into underlying bedrock. In southern portions of the state, there's rock right offshore. And many times if you go to some of the beaches in Brunswick County and Pender County, you'll actually know that if you walk offshore, you can feel the rock under your feet. And if you dredge that rock up, that rock ends up getting thrown out onto the beach. And that happened down in Oak Island. There's a bunch of rock out on the beach, and folks say that was actually from a dredge material island, and that rock had been put in that island decades before. So you can see that if somebody really hasn't managed their sand and their sediment properly, 30 or 40 years down the road, when people don't really know what's in that island, it can affect the beach now. So it's very important that even if we're not going to use this sediment in this island for decades to come, that we do our best to be responsible in management and make sure it's there are no surprises for those that do put it on the beach.
Ronnie from Burgaw Middle, can the sea animals in the hole live there if they can't get out?
Well, they all do get out, because eventually all this water is evacuated and pushed back into the estuary. So, yeah.
But I imagine that the salinity could get really low in here, because if you have a lot of rain coming in, your seawater, the concentration of your seawater will go down.
No, that's an excellent question and an excellent point, that you are going to make the water brackish, a little more brackish, and that's just a little less saline the more fresh water you add to it. So you could throw the salinity out of equilibrium. Hopefully there's still enough communication through the sand that you still have some communication with the water in the estuary. But the fact is that this hole will probably be filled up in a short amount of time and the island will be full again. But there may be some animals that don't make it, unfortunately. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. More questions? We doing all right? Do you have any more questions?
Yeah, I have a question. When was Brant Island formed, and what are the effects that it has had since then? Like, if the ships had navigated the channel before, why did they need to dredge it? If they'd been navigating, why did it all of a sudden become worse?
Rudy, you want to handle this one?
Yeah.
You're more familiar with the island.
You know, they actually started dredging this Morehead City in 1911, actually. And as the ships got bigger and bigger and more, you know, cargo became, you know, the bigger ships, the more cargo, the less, you know, trips you have to make, the better for the environment it is. There was a request to make the channel deeper. And as you make the channel deeper, more, you know, sand comes in, and therefore you have to find a place to put the sand. And that's how Brant Island came into being. This island was first pumped out in 1986, again in 1994, and then this most recent winter. So that's why.
And someone wanted to know, do we know why this is called Brant Island? Is it named after anybody special?
I really don't know the answer to that. It's been on the maps since before it became a disposal island.
Mm-hmm.
And actually on the maps it's spelled B-R-A-N-T. So the D came somewhere along the line. So, yeah.
Anything you want to talk about next?
Well, we can go through and talk about just in general. As we mentioned before, we're on the backside of a barrier island. And it's important to kind of know the makeup of where we are. In a traditional barrier island, this is an ideal cartoon here of one. You have the open ocean and the beach. And of course you've got dunes, and the dunes are much finer sand than the beach, because that's windblown sand that gets put up and concentrated in the dunes. And then you kind of go back into marsh or wetlands and back into the estuary, and eventually you'll get to the mainland back here. So our barrier island chain, whether they're a mile from shore or 50 miles from shore, they're still barrier islands, and they were still formed in the same process, and they're slowly moving towards land. And they almost roll back on themselves as they migrate towards land. So a lot of times when there's a hurricane and it takes a lot of sand from the ocean and the nearshore environment and throws it up across the beach, it's called overwash. And a lot of folks get in there and they clear the roads and they clear their lots and they put the sand back on the beach. But it's really the island's way of wanting to grow higher and wider, because as more overwash comes across that island, it ends up building up back in the estuary, and the island slowly moves in this direction. And the same with inlets. You know, our inlets are migrating. Some migrate a lot faster than others. And as they migrate, if I can go back to that picture here, as an inlet migrates one direction or the other, it leaves this flood delta behind. So that's a big pile of sand. And most of it is sand because it's coming out of the coastal system. Now sometimes when you dredge, when you get into the quieter waters of the lagoon or waters with less energy, they don't have enough power to move sand grains. They can only move what we call fine grain material, or fines, which are your silts and your clays and your muds. And so the further you get away from the high energy ocean, the finer grain material you get in your channels. So you wouldn't want to go far inland into a river and put that dredged material on the beach, because it's going to be a lot of mud. You really want to stay close to the beach and make sure you have the coarse material that came out of that system. But as the inlet moves, this flood delta remains in place. So that's a big pile of sediment behind the island. So if the inlet moved this direction, it would then build up a flood delta here. And if the inlet moved over here, it would build up a flood delta here. and eventually the island is just going to roll right back onto this pile of sediment and continue to be the same barrier island it was, just a little closer to land.
Sarah from Bergall Middle wants to know, are you ever worried that sand will run out?
Absolutely. Sand is a commodity, much like gold or oil happens to be, and sand really has to be managed. Lots of folks think, let's see if I could go to another picture here. If we look at a cross-section of our continental shelf, we're up here at the beach, and you go 40, 50 miles offshore, and it drops off into thousands of feet of water here at the shelf slope break at the edge of the continental shelf. Lots of folks have the belief that there's just sand all over this shelf, and there's an endless supply to put on our beaches, and that's not the fact. This poses a challenge because we don't allow hardened structures on the shoreline, which really lets our barrier islands behave naturally. That means our only defense against coastal erosion is putting sand on the beaches in these soft erosion projects or these beach nourishment projects. And to do that, you need an ample supply of good quality, beach quality sand. And it just doesn't really exist in an infinite resource out here on the continental shelf. So it's very important. And really, standing on this island, this is a testament to managing beach quality sand, because if it could go on the beach, you want it to go on the beach because there's such a limited supply. And there are other parts of the state that really have a lot less sand than we do here. Bogue Banks is very lucky that it has two inlets. There's no development on either of the islands that are adjacent to Bogue Banks, so they really get a lot of sand for themselves. But if you get further south, there's just not as much sand in the system.
Aaron and Tiffany want to know, how does dredging affect plant life?
Well, I guess there are goods and bads to it. You can say that if you put sand on the beach, you cover up a lot of the grasses, but that happens anyway, and due to the natural migration of sand dunes. If you've ever been up north to Jockey's Ridge State Park, the one of the largest sand dunes in the eastern portion of the state, you'll notice that the sand is always shifting and covers up plants, but the plants grow through the dune and they kind of move with the dune. And also, if you can see along this island, we've got trees and grasses all over the place. And the edges of this island will always stay intact because they need to confine the dredge material that's put into the hole in the inside of the island.
So in a way, the plants sort of stabilize the sediment and keep Brant Island from disappearing, keeping the sediment where it should be.
Absolutely, that's an excellent point. And a good dune system, a healthy dune system, will have lots of grasses on it because that helps stabilize the dune and actually lets it grow higher and wider. Because if a storm comes through, the sand is less likely to blow away if it has a lot of plants on it and a root structure that kind of holds it into place. We got a couple more questions coming in.
Somebody wants to know if the fishing is good here off Brant Island.
Rudy, you might know that. You're a local.
Is it good near Brant Island? Yes, because there's deep water because of the dredging, and you get a lot of different species of fish coming in. And I can't tell you exactly where, but it's good.
Good question. And
a good fisherman never reveals the sweet fishing holes.
That's right. Yeah. Joel wants to know, do you have to work at this every day? I guess, do you have to dredge every day? Do you have to manage your sediment every day?
You need to think about it every day. A good coastal manager looks at the big picture and realizes that it's not what's coming up this year, but maybe what's coming up in the next 5 years and the next 10 years. And really has to consider, if all I can do is have beach nourishment, do I have enough sand? How am I going to manage this sand? And I really do need to say, it's so much more than coastal management. We have to work with so many other state agencies, our local governments and elected officials and the counties and the towns. We rely on, just for example, Rudy from the Carteret County Shore Protection Office. We look forward to working with other state agencies. We've got a great relationship with agencies such as Fish and Wildlife, Water Quality, Water Resources. We've got a good relationship with the Army Corps of Engineers and other federal agencies such as NOAA, the National Park Service. So you really do have to work at this every day and keep the phone lines open and talk to everyone that has an interest here. And probably most importantly is talk to the people that live down here and the people that visit down here, because they're stakeholders too, and they have a vested interest in what happens to their ports and their dredged material and their beaches. So you do have to work at this every day, not specifically this island and this dredging project, but the big picture of managing our coast. And it's a lot of people working at this every day.
Absolutely. And our coastal communities are very concerned about dredging and beach nourishment, because a lot of their revenue comes from the tourists who come and use our beaches. And that's a very important reason why we have to nourish them. We had a question here. This is a great question. How do hurricanes affect dredging and your job?
Well, that's an excellent question. And real quick, I'm going to mention that if you've been watching the PowerPoint slides that have come up of the aerial photos of the island, the red dot on those slides is approximately where we're standing. So as those pictures have come up on the screen, that's where we are standing, and you can get a feel for where we are in relationship to the island, the inlet, the town of Morehead City, and the state port. But back to the question about hurricanes, absolutely, anytime there's a storm, it moves a lot of sediment around. A lot of times that sediment ends up on the beach, other times it ends up in the inlets and in our navigation channels through the inlets. And so you've got to go and measure that. Even after the big tsunami last year, last December, over in the Indian Ocean, that affected where the sediment was on the ocean floor and actually the height of the ocean floor. So lots of folks had to go and survey and see where the safe shipping lanes were. In addition, hurricanes also open up new inlets. And if you've ever looked at historic maps of the coast, you can see that the inlets not only move, but new ones come into play and they close. For instance, Hurricane Isabel a couple years ago opened an inlet by Hatteras Village and basically made an island out of Hatteras Village. So the state came in and closed that breach and got rid of that inlet. There are other natural inlets that have naturally closed, such as Corn Cake Inlet, which is just north of Bald Head Island. So really, Bald Head Island is not an island anymore, because that inlet has closed naturally. And in the southernmost portion of our state by Sunset Beach, Mad Inlet has closed naturally. So Bird Island, which is one of our great research reserve sites, is now no longer an island, and it's attached to Sunset Beach. We got a question here. Are state ports the only place you are allowed to dredge? No, those are obviously the places where we probably dredge the most, because we have the most ship traffic and some of the biggest ships. The port of Morehead City is obviously one port, and the port of Wilmington is the other state port. And you've got super tankers and super cargo ships coming in. So you can imagine the channels are wide and deep to accommodate those ships. But any inlet where you have boat traffic through and you want to keep a safe navigation path, the inlets are dredged. Oregon Inlet is a good example. As a matter of fact, they just moved Bogue Inlet. They moved the main channel. Basically, this did two things. It allowed a better channel and a straighter channel for navigation, and it also took care of some erosion that was occurring at the end of Bogue Banks right there at Bogue Inlet, where sandbags were the only thing protecting the homes.
And somebody else wanted to know, what is a state port? Well, a state port is a place where large ships come in, sometimes tankers and super tankers carrying cargo from other countries. Here in Morehead City, I know we bring things in like rubber, where we get those from Indonesia. And we use rubber for things like tires and I don't know, all kinds of things. What other things? Do you know anything else that comes into our state port here?
Well, lots of stuff comes in and things also go out. We export a lot of phosphate material that comes out of the Aurora phosphate mining area. We also export a lot of wood. We have a lot of pine trees that grow in this state, and wood chips and pulp is exported in bulk out of here. And if the camera can swing around, we can actually get a good shot of the port.
Unfortunately, we don't have any big ships in today, but it's pretty neat to see them come in.
You can see some of the gantry cranes over there and the water tower. So right across the way with that concrete bulkhead and some of those warehouses, that's the state port in Morehead City. And I will say that bulkheads are allowed in the estuary. You may have heard me say you can't put them on the ocean front, but they're allowed to stabilize in the estuary. So So that was probably a question I probably kept a bunch of you from asking.
And you can see it's a very industrial area. This is a area where we do a lot of work. There's a lot of people moving cargo around, storing cargo. Ships are coming in. We did have another question, if we had any coral reefs near here, and probably how would dredging affect a coral reef?
If you were dredging, you would avoid a coral reef. You wouldn't have a coral reef in the channel, and the coral reefs are going to be further offshore. Out in quieter water, and really you've got most of the coral reefs in the warmer waters of Florida, but you do have some cooler water reefs up here, but not a lot. I think Stockton had another question.
What have you found in the sand? Because it seems like a large-scale treasure hunt. So have you ever found anything besides just sand and fish and stuff?
Well, in my experience riding a dredge, I've seen lots of pieces of wood and styrofoam and big conch shells, Mercenaria shells. Rudy, I bet you found some crazy things. Like, have you ever found tires?
Yeah, tires and steel piece of fragments from fishing boats. But one of the things they do before they dredge, they'll do a cultural resource survey. And basically what they do is they take a magnetometer and survey the water. And that magnetometer gives a reading if there's metal.
So like a big metal detector.
Exactly, underwater metal detector. And if they see a ping, they will look at that ping and determine whether it's an artifact, Blackbeard's, a ship, or something like that. So it's not a willy-nilly just dredge here and go. So
yeah, we did talk about that earlier, how off of our coast here is sort of the graveyard of the Atlantic, and a lot of ships have wrecked. So I imagine you have to be very careful about not dredging up artifacts, because that could be historically important to North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Rudy had a good point talking about some of the undersea surveys that they do with the magnetics. The dredging is actually a fairly precise operation, even though you think of this hose or this cutter head just sucking up the sediment and putting it somewhere else. You know, the channels are marked on the maps very well. The depths are very well known. When they go through and dredge, they do surveys after every day to really know the extent of how far they've gone, because they don't want to go any deeper than the existing channel. They'll run all sorts of geophysical surveys offshore so they can get a good picture of the sea bottom and what's under it. Now, we had another question about what the tractors are doing. And I think if we go to slide 4, and can put up slide 4, right under the arrow where it says sand, you can see there's a front-end loader and a tractor there. And that's a dike. Basically, that was the opening of Brant Island, where the dredge came in and removed all this material. So now the tractors are still working behind us, and they've closed that opening with sand from the island. So on slide 4, you can almost see at the bottom right-hand corner of the picture, that line of sand is really sand that was put in there to close off the interior of the island from the exterior of the island.
Actually, this is where they get the sand to make that closure dike.
Yep, so we can actually get the camera just behind us and down at the ground, and you can see they're removing the sand from just 3 feet behind us, and they're moving it over to help close in the island. And construction is almost done, so there aren't a lot of tractors moving around today. They're parked over there. But this is an active construction site, and you don't really expect to see a tractor on the island, but they do. They bring them over by barges, and when they're done, they'll go on a barge and go back across the sound.
How much time, Amy?
Got any more questions coming in? I know we have about 4 minutes left. Lauren's got a question, and it says, can you dredge on either coastline? And I assume, is that the oceanfront coastline and the estuary coastline? And that's what I'm going to assume that means, and I hope I got that right, Lauren. You don't do too much dredging out in the open ocean because it's such a high-energy environment. And if you were to dredge a channel offshore on the beach, it would likely be filled in within 5 or 10 days. And I should just say it would likely be filled in a matter of weeks, because there's so much sediment and so much wave activity out there. We really dredge in the inlets, and then behind the inlets and into the barriers, where we can keep the sediment out of those channels for a longer period of time, and there's a lot less energy in the water column, a lot less wave energy. So, how many islands have been dredged? I guess that's how many dredge disposal islands are there. There are lots, and there are lots of unnamed islands. Like I mentioned before, if you look at a map or even an aerial photo along our intracoastal waterway, you can see that that's where they put the material when they opened up that canal. And so I guess you could count those as dredge disposal islands too, even though some of them are fairly small, 10 to 20 feet across.
And probably most of our beaches in North Carolina have dredged material on them?
I would say that a large portion of the beaches, except up in Dare County, and I know Topsail Island's never been nourished. Dare County has not been nourished, but Wrightsville Beach has been nourished since the 50s, and that material's come out of Mason Inlet. Down in, Bogue Banks, Rudy, how long have you all been nourishing with dredged material?
1978.
Yeah. So 30, 40 years here. So I would say most of the southern beaches have received dredged material, except for Topsail Island, and I would say some like Onslow Beach and some of the beaches that belong to the military in the state.
Stockton, did you have another question?
Yes. How are Cape Lookout beaches nourished, or are they nourished at all?
Cape Lookout beaches, the oceanfront beach is not nourished, but believe it or not, there is a plan that is in the works to nourish the backside of the beach on the boat landing. Hurricane Isabel really put a good a licking on that area, and they plan to nourish the estuarine side of the beach so people can enter the island and do things of that nature. And they're going to get that sand from the channel connecting from Cape Lookout to Harker's Island, which is near Barden's Inlet, which coincidentally opened up in the early part of the century. So they do nourish, but it's on a different type of scale.
And we had a question: is there dredging at the Wilmington port?
Absolutely, and they're actually just finishing up a very big project called Operation Clean Sweep, where they're dredging their entire channel up the Cape Fear River and all the way offshore, a couple miles to their offshore disposal site. And if you've been to Bald Head Island received a big portion of that sand that came out of that channel. So sometimes the dredge material is put into a disposal island like Brant Island, and sometimes it's put directly on the beach. And if that's the case, there are some studies that are done before to make sure that you've got good quality sand. But Bald Head Island, the sand looks great. I was out there a couple weeks ago, and that was a very successful use of nourished material. And that's the way we really need to think in the big scale of managing our beaches. And don't think of it as dredge spoil. If it comes out of a channel, it may be the kind of stuff you want to lay down and build a sandcastle out of.
Well, great. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We are running out of time. One more question from Stockton. Sorry.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, is there anything that we can do as tourists and beachgoers to help this process?
That's a very good question. I don't think we have enough time to cover all the philosophy behind it, but just know about coastal processes. Educate yourself and educate your neighbors and your family members, and know that coastal erosion is a natural process, and we really we have to manage the beach once we start to develop the beach, and then there's a whole lot of questions, and you have to answer difficult questions as far as when does the environment and the ecology, what are the trade-offs to that, if you're looking at the social and economic impacts to our tourism and our recreation, because we all want to have a nice beach to walk on. And the beaches in North Carolina are public access beaches, with the exception of Figure Eight Island. But even if you were to land your boat on Figure Eight Island, you could walk on that beach, because the public has historically had access to that. And especially if public money is used, federal or state tax money is used to move this sand on the beach, it's forever a public beach, because that's just the taxpayers pay for it and they have a right to access it. And so it's important to know that erosion is going on all the time, that sea level has been coming up for thousands of years, that there are challenges to managing a coastline when you start to build homes and hotels, and you want to recreate on the beach and take your vacations there. It's very complicated, but just educating and knowing all the issues and realizing that it's not always one issue. It's about five or six different issues that are almost impossible to to tear apart because they're all intertwined.
Great. Thank you so much.
Excellent questions, Stockton.
Well, thanks, everybody, for your wonderful questions. They were really terrific. I'm Whitney Jenkins with the National Estuarine Research Reserve, and we have Stockton
from Halifax Academy.
Jeff Warren from the Division of Coastal Management.
And one more.
And Greg Rudolph and Rudy from Carteret County.
And thank you, Greg, Stockton, and Jeff for joining us. Teachers, please fill out the evaluation form. We will send you a certificate of participation. We really value that information. We've got some weather, somebody from the National Weather Service coming up next, and we're also going to be doing some decoy carving with people from Harker's Island later today. So please stay with us. We'll see you later.